Welcome to Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlene. Vegan Nation is an informational program about living the vegan lifestyle, featuring interviews with individuals and organizations who are practicing a healthy vegan lifestyle. Welcome to Vegan Nation. This is Marlene Narrow, and I am very honored and happy that joining us is vegan author and publisher Martin Rowe. Martin was born in England, educated at Oxford University, and received his master's in religious studies from New York University. Martin is the co-founder of Lantern Books in New York City. Thank you, Martin, for joining us on Vegan Nation.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Marlene. Thank you.
I am so thrilled that you're joining us. You are amazing with your writings and all of your books, and there's so much to cover. And so I think it'd be great to start with your workshops that you are leading at the Compassion Arts Festival in Massachusetts this month.
Yes, well, I'm very delighted to be part of it, and I'm happy to be talking about a range of subjects that are very near and dear to my heart. So I am going to be giving a talk about the Canadian photojournalist Joanne MacArthur and her work We Animals, which Lantern published a book of. So I'll be talking about her work and then my monograph that I wrote about one of her photographs called The Polar Bear in the Zoo. And I will also be talking about the Kenyan environmentalist and 2004 Nobel Peace Prize laureate Wangari Maathai, whom I have done a lot of work with over the 10 years from 2001 to 2011 when she died. So I'll be talking about why she's important as an environmentalist and as a public figure, and also leading a workshop on writing and publishing. So happy to offer my thoughts and suggestions on that as well.
So I'd love to hear about Joanne, and who is Joanne MacArthur, and how did you hear about her work?
So Joanne MacArthur is a Canadian photojournalist who has been photographing for over a decade now what she calls animals in the human environment. Of course, her title, We Animals, draws attention to the fact that we human beings are also animals. So what she's done is she's gone around the world photographing animals in factory farms and in slaughterhouses and in vivisection laboratories and in breeding facilities and in fur farms and all sorts of zoos and aquaria, other places where animals are confined for our entertainment, amusement, usage, food, etc. But she's also photographed rescues, live rescues, open rescues, and sanctuaries, and those people who look after animals and care for them and care about them. So I came across her work a few years ago when she contacted us about possibly producing a book of her photographs. Now, at that time, that kind of obligation for a publisher was extremely expensive. Naturally, these books need to be in full color and on nice paper, and it was difficult for us then to be able to afford to do it. But the crowdfunding programs that are now available, such as Kickstarter and Indiegogo, ultimately made it possible for us to produce that book, which we did. And that book came out in tandem with a documentary film by the award-winning Canadian documentary filmmaker Liz Marshall about Joanne's work called The Ghosts in Our Machine, which many of your listeners may have seen. And so that in tandem has really brought Joanne's work to a very broad audience. So I'll be talking about her work and what makes her distinctive from other photographers of animals in the human environment.
And what makes her work important or interesting to you?
Well, I think what makes her interesting to me is that not only does she take photographs of things that we don't want to look at, obviously things like factory farms and fur farms and slaughterhouses, but she shows that she's not just interested in photographing beautiful animals. So what Joanne does is actually she shows us the context and the frames of these animals' lives as they are confined by us, literally, in the case of her photographs. So I think that's a very important aspect, that she wants us to make sure that we see the animals that we have in our world in context and not just as abstract aesthetic phenomena. At the same time, she also wants her photographs to be beautiful, even if they are showing terrible things, terrible activities that we are performing upon animals. So her photos have a compositional integrity. She's aware of light and shadow, of the contrasts of colors. And the photos, because they are well composed. They're not just propaganda. They're not just attempts to show something terrible taking place. She actually gives another depth of focus, literally, in her photographs, which is about how we look at animals. And humans are a very important facet of her photographs. The photographs often contain humans in them looking at the animals. So the photographs are also about the art of looking and what it is we see when we see animals and they look at us. And the whole meaning of her photographs in the end is how animals are unavoidable to us. Even when we don't think they're there, we're not paying attention to them, they're there. And they are, as the film of the same name says, the ghosts in our machine. Our world is filled with animals' bodies, even if we don't think animals are all around us. They are.
Also, I did see The Ghosts in Our Machine, and I really enjoyed that documentary. And I also look forward to attending your workshop at Earthlands in Petersham, Mass. During the Compassion Arts Festival. And your workshop is being held Tuesday, October 27th, 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Next, I'd like to hear about your work with Wangari Maathai.
Wangari Maathai she died in 2011, a Kenyan environmentalist who, during the 1970s, found herself, and she was at that point a professor of anatomy at Nairobi University. She was one of the first people to gain a PhD in East and Central Africa, and a highly educated woman. She found herself being visited by people from the Central Highlands of Kenya, where she'd grown up, who were telling her that the rivers were drying up and that they were walking further and further afield to find firewood. And so her response was, why don't we plant more trees? She remembered growing up in a heavily forested region, and she was seeing desertification and soil erosion and other facets of what happens when you cut down too many trees. So she suggested planting trees and created the Greenbelt Movement, which was an organization predominantly run by collectives of women who planted trees. During that period, Kenya was under one-party rule under the autocratic leadership of Daniel Arap Moi, and Wangari found that the issue of environmental degradation was deeply tied to governance issues, that these women and also the poor in general felt powerless to change the situation. The land was being taken from them and given to cronies in the government. And so the Greenbelt Movement morphed not only from being an environmental, non-governmental organization which planted trees to becoming a kind of quasi-political force to create a sense of political participation amongst ordinary Kenyans. And because of that, she ran afoul of the government and was beaten up and jailed and threatened. Her life was threatened because she began to move into campaigns against land grabbing and campaigns to stop the imprisonment and torture of political prisoners by the Moi government. So that was a very powerful combination of environmental and social activism. As a woman, she was belittled and humiliated because women were not meant to be engaged in politics and certainly weren't meant to speak out against injustices along those lines. And so she was humiliated as a woman as well. So she also had this force that was a feminist force for change in Kenya. I came across her work in the mid-1990s. I heard her speak at the American Museum of Natural History as a concluding lecture for the Center of the Study of World Religions at Harvard University, so she was part and parcel of that. And in 2001, Mia and I went to Kenya as part of a social improvement campaign, and we met her, and we suggested that she publish a book, asked if she had a book, and she said, yes, I do. And Lantern then published that book as The Greenbelt Movement, a study about the Greenbelt Movement. We suggested that she write her autobiography at that time, and she very modestly said that she didn't think anybody would be interested and she didn't have enough time. So we suggested that we would help her by interviewing her and creating a transcript, and we helped her write her autobiography and then two further books that she wrote, The Challenge for Africa and Replenishing the Earth. And in the course of working with her, we came to see her as an extraordinary transformational figure, a woman who not only was a grassroots activist, but also a member of parliament, who straddled the very local grassroots, ordinary people's activism through to international agencies and international development on a global scale, calling for people to plant trees, to restore watersheds, to stop soil erosion, to halt desertification, to help provide food and food security for the very poorest, but also somebody who was working on the ground, quite literally, hands on her knees, fingers in the soil, planting trees, up to 50 million of them with the Greenbelt Movement. And so she was a really remarkable woman whom we learned a huge amount from. And so I want to share my experience of her and what she taught me about international development and a kind of holistic approach to reflecting on all aspects of conservation, including animal advocacy.
Thank you, Martin. And Martin, why do you feel that Wangari Maathai is an important person for animal advocates to know about?
Well, I think for me, what she taught me more than anything else was that you never forget where you come from. I mean, she always considered herself to be a rural woman from the central highlands of Kenya, even though she was one of the most formidably highly educated and knowledgeable people I've ever come across, and even though she became a national, then an international figure in Kenya. So that's, I think, important for everybody to realize, is that who do you really work for? Who are you really representing? And she represented the indigenous woman farmer and man farmer of the central highlands of Kenya, those people who are routinely ignored by the elite wherever they are in the world, the ordinary people. She understood that bottom-up development is tough but necessary, so grassroots are important. I think we tend to have a feeling that if we can get everybody into power, top-down development, top-down solutions will solve everything. But she understood that grassroots activism is important. She reminded us that many traditions around the world have an ethic of care, and that concern for animals is not only a Western concern or a modern concern or an imperialistic imposition on other cultures, but it wasn't an indulgence. It wasn't something that you thought about after you'd solved all the other problems, but was a fundamental feature of all conservation. And in the broadest sense, I think she reminds me in my animal advocacy, and I hopefully would remind other people in whatever social justice act they are, that context is everything. And this is very important, I think, when we think about the way we assign causes and problems. She would often say that lurking behind what we think of as tribalism or ethnic rivalry or religious conflict is a conflict over resources and the inequitable distribution of those resources or the difficulty of accessing those resources because of climate change. So she would often point to what we would have considered to be ethnic conflicts or religious conflicts or tribalism in that sort of broad sense and say, well, this is probably a consequence of somebody trying to get oil or somebody trying to get access to grazing land for their cattle or people trying to move into other areas because there is drought and they need access to water. So behind many, many conflicts is an environmental issue that needs to be handled. And so environmentalism is at the core of political problems, just as politicization of ethnicity is often the reason why there is quote-unquote ethnic conflict. It's that politicians use ethnicity in order to gain power and hold it. So these are the kinds of things that she asked us to think about, and I think that's very important when we look at any issue, including animal advocacy, and try and ask ourselves, what is really going on here?
It's time to take a break. We are joined by author and publisher Martin Rowe of Lantern Books. Martin has been sharing information about his upcoming workshops in Massachusetts being held in October at Earthlands in Petersham, Mass., and the workshop on the vision of Joanne MacArthur, happening on Tuesday, October 27th, and also his workshop, The Elephants in the Room, focusing on his experience and work with environmentalist Wangari Maathai of Kenya, being held on Thursday, October 29th. And we'll be hearing more details about these upcoming workshops, as well as the many books that Martin Rowe has written and his journey into veganism and his experience in co-founding Lantern Books.
You're in tune to WCUW 91.3 FM, community radio serving central Massachusetts, online at wcuw.org.
Hi, this is Kirsten Thien. Help keep your favorite music alive and well on community radio in Worcester, Massachusetts. Won't you consider making a secure, tax-deductible donation today to WCUW online at wcuw.org.
What a beautiful world.
Hi, this is Troy. You're listening to WCUW. Tune in on Fridays and hear the Jukebox of Americana. Fridays from 9 to 12 noon.
Beautiful world.
Welcome back from the break. This is Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlene Narrow. We are very fortunate to be joined by author and publisher Martin Rowe. Martin, I also look forward to attending your workshop being held in Petersham, Mass. on Thursday, October 29th from 7 to 9 p.m., The Elephants in the Room. Can you give us some details about that workshop?
Yes, The Elephants in the Room is the title of a book that I wrote, which is a reflection about Wangari Maathai and my relationship with her, which you've heard about, and also my rather more distant and less intimate relationship with the work of Daphne Sheldrick, who runs the David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust Orphanage in Nairobi, Kenya. Like Wangari Maathai, Daphne was born in Kenya and is a conservationist, and she has dedicated her life to helping orphaned elephants and rhinos and many other species of animals in Kenya. She was instrumental in finding a way to keep baby elephants alive by finding a milk substitute that was fatty enough and full-bodied enough that the elephants could survive on it. Other kinds of animals' milk just didn't make it. So she has been literally keeping elephants and rhinos alive for decades. And so you can actually go and attend the Elephant Orphanage in Nairobi, near Nairobi National Park. At 11 o'clock every morning, they have the feeding of the baby elephants and the rhinos with these huge milk bottles made with coconut milk and other kinds of non-animal product-based milks. And they come and play football, and it's endearing. It's obviously a very tragic story. Many of these orphans are orphaned because of poaching, but also abandonment. And when they are grown, they are released into Tsavo National Park in the southeast part of Kenya. So I have been a supporter of the David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust, as is Mia, and I look at Wangari's autobiography, Unbowed, which I was very involved with creating, but also at Love, Life, and Elephants, which is Daphne Sheldrick's autobiography, which looks at the history of Kenya from a very different perspective and sort of interesting compare and contrast with their life histories and how they approached the different aspects of colonialism that they were involved with. And then I look at elephants, various kinds of elephants, not only the actual elephants that they rescue and the ivory trade that is a source of social destabilization in East Africa and all over Africa since the ivory poaching business is becoming an international syndicate of armed terrorist groups, as well as massive endemic corruption from the smallest poacher to the largest government agencies around the world. But also the metaphorical elephants in the room that I, as a white Englishman, had to deal with in helping write the autobiography of an African woman. So those elephants in the room are colonialism and identification of myself as a British person and the history of treachery that colonialism has forced upon Africa, in Kenya in particular. And then the elephants of race and the elephants of class and the issues of all of those issues, those sort of geopolitical issues. And those are the kinds of issues that I will be talking about, this very complex relationship that we have with memory, of course, another great elephantine quality, of what we remember and what we choose to forget when it comes to looking at our collective and personal histories. So that's what The Elephants in the Room is about, and that's what I'll be talking about in that workshop.
Wonderful. I really look forward to that workshop. And I have to say, from a personal level, I am extremely honored to be speaking with you today on Vegan Nation. Four of my favorite books have been published by Lantern Books. And so the Green Belt Movement about Wangari Maathai, as well as Sister Vegan by Dr. Amy Breeze Harper, and Peace to All Beings by Judy Carman, and The World Peace Diet by Will Tuttle. Your work is so important to helping life on Earth. Thank you. And there's a few more minutes left, so I would like to touch upon your other workshop that you'll be having in Massachusetts during the Compassion Arts Festival at Earthlands in Petersham, Mass. And that is on Wednesday, October 28th, 1 to 3 p.m., a writing and publishing workshop.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for your kind words about Lantern Books. Lantern Books will be nowhere without our authors, but also nowhere without our readers. So we're very pleased to know that our books are reaching readers who feel inspired by the work of the writers to spread the word about our issues that we care about. And I'm delighted to have had the great good fortune and the ability to publish over 16 years these voices and bring them to a broader attention of the world. So I'm very pleased that you enjoyed the books. Yeah, so I'm doing this workshop on writing and publishing.
And you are the writer extraordinaire.
Well, thank you very much. I try and help people learn about these issues in as many ways as I can, whether it's writing, whether it's talking about publishing, or whether it's publishing the books themselves.
And can you share with our listeners your journey to veganism and what veganism means to you?
I knew quite a few vegetarians, and so I just decided to try it as a kind of experiment, physiological experiment, to see what would happen. And like many quote-unquote vegetarians, I called myself a vegetarian even though I still ate fish because I was concerned about protein intake. This was back in the early 1990s. And then at the end of a year in which I'd loudly proclaimed my vegetarianism, I decided at a company outing, a dinner at the end of the year, to eat lobster. And the chef came out and waggled my future dinner in front of my face. And one of my colleagues turned to me and said, "Well, you don't eat cows. Why do you still eat lobsters?" And I made some comment about cows being more ontologically important and sentiently sophisticated than lobsters, blah, blah, blah. And 2 weeks later, having seen through the hollowness of my own argument, I decided to become a real vegetarian. I then came to the United States, and when Mia and I moved in together in 1993, we decided to have a vegan fridge and go vegan that way. And so that was that. And I have been vegan ever since, not only in diet, but also in not wearing animal products as well. And I became involved with animal activism and started a magazine called Satya in New York, which was a magazine of vegetarianism, environmentalism, animal advocacy, and social justice. And that lasted with me as an editor until 1999, when I left, formed Lantern Books. Satya continued under different editorialship until 2007, and Lantern Books took over very similar themes. In addition, we also publish religion and social thought issues, and also books on family therapy and psychology. So that's that. That's how I became interested in it. I wish I could say I had an extremely powerful conversion experience, or that I read one particular book, but I didn't, ironically, since I'm in the business of trying to create books that change people's hearts and minds. But that's how it happened.
Thank you for being a great vegan activist and a fascinating author and publisher. And again, I'm very excited that you'll be here in Massachusetts for your workshops at Earthlands in Petersham, Mass. I look forward to your workshop about Wangari Maathai, as well as The Vision of Joanne MacArthur, and your writing and publishing workshop as well. I just love the fact that veganism is becoming more popular, which of course, as you know, that it's very important for all aspects of humanity and life on Earth for everyone. And I had contacted you back in 2013, and I want to thank you for giving me permission to reprint the poem by Mary Spears called Eyes of the Dead. And her poem is published in Sister Vegan, and I wanted to include that in one of my articles at World Peace Writers, and the article is named Celebrate Our Return to Indigenous Veganism. So I am super thrilled that here it is 2015, and now we're connecting on a radio show, Vegan Nation.
Well, I'm very glad. Yes, I was very happy to offer permission as a publisher, and I love Sister Vegan. I was just such a privilege to be able to publish that book and to show the diversity and range of voices within the animal advocacy community, but within all communities, and to really show people that every community around the world is thinking about these issues, about social justice and food justice and health and wellness, and what it means to be a living being in today's world and care for the other than human world. So that book, along with other books that we've published that link social justice with concern for the body politic, our own bodies, and the bodies of other beings. We published one called Nonviolence Now, which has just come out from Elise Lane. But these are very, very significant contributions, and I'm really honored to be in a position to have published those books as well. So thank you for featuring Sister Vegan and Amy on your show, and other voices. It's very important that these voices have as many venues as possible to be heard, and your venue is an important one. Thank you.
And speaking of important venues of voices to be heard, I was happy to hear that you participated this year in the online conference called The Vegan Praxis of Black Lives Matter.
Well, I was very honored to be part of it. I was surprised to be included since, you know, I'm a white male, white heterosexual male, and I think it's very important that there are spaces that people feel safe and comfortable in, that they can feel free to be able to voice their concerns. And that was one space that was, and I felt very privileged to be part of it. I was profoundly impressed by the discussions that were taking place. And I also think, and I think this is because of my work with Wangari Maathai, and that's who I talked about in the Black Lives Matter seminar, is that what she taught us is that we do a lot of talking and not enough listening. So that was a very enriching experience for me with Wangari Maathai, and I've tried to carry that forward in whomever I interact with, including in the Black Lives Matter seminar.
Yes, I'm very happy that Dr. Amy Breeze Harper organized that online seminar. She, like you, is a powerhouse on earth, uplifting consciousness. Thank you. And we're coming to a close in the interview. In Martin, are there any other additional messages that you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Well, I would hope to see as many of your listeners, if they can make the trip to Earthlands and Peterson. I would be thrilled to meet them. And there are many, many other great workshops that are happening there in a beautiful fall setting. And so I hope many of you will come, as many of you will come as possible, and sign up to our workshops, and we'll have great conversation. So please come.
Thank you. And what contacts can you leave with our listeners?
Well, you can find all our books online at lanternbooks.com. Our books are available as e-books as well as printed works. You can find out more about my writing at martin-rowe.com. You can follow our cricket and baseball musings at rightoffthebatbook.com. And I hope to sell some books. We'll have plenty of books for you to purchase at the Earthland events. And keep listening to the show, keep reading our books, keep talking about these issues. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Martin. I greatly appreciate you spending time with us on Vegan Nation.
Thank you. It's been a real pleasure.
We've been joined by vegan author and publisher Martin Rowe of Lantern Books in New York City. Martin will be coming up to Massachusetts this month, leading workshops during the Compassion Arts Festival at Earthlands in Petersham, Mass. And I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in to Vegan Nation. Join us next week at this time, where we'll bring you more news on living a vegan lifestyle. Hear this program again at wcuw.org/Vegan Nation. Theme music provided by Will Tuttle. This is Marlene Narrow wishing you a good day.